Can I start by acknowledging the traditional owners? I'd also like to acknowledge the Ministers Wynne and Roberts and although she comes with a different hat to the Chair of the South Australian Affordable Housing Trust Board of Management, Mary Marsland. I want to start by painting a picture of how housing has changed in our lifetimes. 50 years ago in South Australia, an average income was about £300 and an average house about £1,100. We've talked about the ratio of 3 to 1, moving up to about 7 or 8 to 1 today. Interestingly also, 50 years ago, an average house size was about 110 square metres. Most recently, the average house size that we have been building in South Australia is closer to 221 square metres. And again in 1950, nearly 4 people lived in that 110 square metre house. Today, less than 2.5 people live in that house. So we've seen house prices double relative to income, we've seen the house size double, and we've seen the number of people living in that really coming down. Our history really, I guess, post-war as a home-owning country really is under threat. I think the most recent census, if you dug into it, really showed a very concerning trend, which was really the significant reduction in the level of home purchases between census period 2001 and 2006. Now that really, I think, is the important forward measure for us, because it's where young people move into the employment market and access their first home ownership opportunity as a purchaser, that really is a measure of the health of our country, or the health of home ownership as the predominant form of how we house ourselves. And let me give you another measure in South Australia. When we had a look at the lowest 60% of the income, we would describe that as the low and moderate income earners. So in South Australia, that is all households earning up to $59,000 a year. And I'd remind you that the lowest 60% is by definition the majority. If we looked at the properties available in the market that they could afford with a traditional loan, the number was 13%. So we had 60% of the population, the amount of properties available for sale that they could afford was 13%. And that's really what started South Australia on the cycle about 3 years ago, establishing an affordable housing strategy and an affordable housing response. I'd put to you that our market change is not so much about cycles. Certainly we've seen some house price cycles and we'll always see house price cycles. But I think I'd argue, and I think it's been accepted increasingly by economists, that we are seeing a major shift in the structure, the fundamentals of the market, and one that in fact demands quite different approaches to ones we've seen in the past. So Commonwealth, state and local governments currently find themselves with a set of tools that I guess were adequate for the housing market in the past, but need modernisation for the future. This country really needs to build new policy and practice, and I think that is really reflected in the work of the state and territory housing ministers over the last couple of years. This is a space where housing ministers worked and really identified the need to move from beyond providers to a far wider facilitators, to look at the impact of land and planning and tax and the like. And if you've read the material that the ministers put out about 12 months ago in what was described as the six-point plan, I think you'll see that much wider approach, capturing the imagination of housing ministers' agenda. That's a quick summary of the problem. What's a quick summary of the answer? I think it's obviously a complex issue, but if you were in the elevator, I guess, with the Prime Minister and had that 10 seconds, I think I would have to say we really need supply, supply, supply. I think we've come, I think, fairly collectively to a view that we have an undersupply of housing and an undersupply of the diversity of housing that we need to rebuild a solid affordable housing platform in the country. Supply is important. In South Australia, we would give a bit of an example of wanting to see an additional residential construction activity of 10 or 15% per annum. What sort? Affordable housing is really goes across, I guess, our traditional housing continuums, across home ownership and across rental, both public, private and non-government providers. In the area of home ownership, we'd probably say we need greater diversity. Now, I think the figures that I pulled out before really give a bit of an indication that whilst we have a very efficient housing industry, we haven't tended to see that efficiency focus in on the diversity that's required with the demographic base that we are seeing. We need far greater diversity, and in particular, we need entry-level housing. In the private rental sector, we need additional supply, and that additional supply will really be brought on by the sorts of additional yield that is required to attract far wider investment. We've seen significant investment of institutional monies in the UK and the US into, I guess, the affordable housing sector, and I think that really is the very bold targets of the Commonwealth and the states in embarking on the National Rental Affordability Scheme. In social housing, which has been a bit of a focus of the states in the 50-odd years of the Commonwealth State Housing Amendment, we clearly need to see reform and modernisation. In the public housing sector, this means achieving viability. We can't continue to operate a model on a system that simply does not have an appropriate business case. So one of the big challenges of the National Affordable Housing Agreement will be to both protect and modernise the investments that this country has made into public housing, into those 350,000-odd units over the last 60 years. That will be about viability. It will also be about location. I think we've all learnt the necessity of connecting up low and income and disadvantaged communities back into employment back into education. And we clearly need significant investment in public housing to be able to get the diversity that a contemporary or modern public housing system would need. Secondly, we need the establishment of a new, housing association sector, and I think some of the commitments that we've heard from Victoria and West Australia show the acknowledgement of that by government and the very bold commitments that have been made in those states. Who needs to get busy? Again, I think the housing ministers were very early in really putting the case across this country that the solution demands a contribution from all sectors. Most importantly, it's about the development sector, about the building sector and the finance sectors. It's about all tiers of government. And importantly, we're recognising that land and planning is important. The solution to affordable housing won't be a narrow solution around a public housing system. It will be a solution around a public system that is embraces that within a wider continuum of providers, a wider continuum of contributors, right across the home ownership and rental domains. Well, what are we doing in South Australia? First of all, and I think we acknowledge that all states are working in a very collaborative fashion around the new agreement. We are particularly keen to see the connections of the new agreement reinforce the connections to supply and to land and planning. In South Australia, we're also working very closely with local government, which we see perhaps as an opportunity that has not been benefited significantly to date. We have a very active local government association who has established a joint working group between state and Commonwealth governments around affordable housing. And we've really been working with 10 or a dozen councils who have identified an interest in working in the affordable housing space. Now, there are a range of different models. I think if states are diverse, local governments are probably more diverse in reflecting their communities. For example, we are working with some of the councils who are bringing land to bear, either land in a land banking way to put into a development that will achieve, amongst other things, affordable housing in the outcome. Equally, one of the councils has entered into a shared equity arrangement where they have brought land, which actually acts in a shared equity arrangement to allow young households or older retiring households to get into home ownership at about half the cost than if the land was embedded in the price. In the planning area, we're working with local governments, particularly around the development of incentive-based inclusionary zoning. And importantly, I think we're all really looking at how we see the shape of our cities grow through the concentration of additional housing around transport developments. In South Australia, it's important that we see that occur. We really are bound by vineyards, and if you know anyone from South Australia, the thought of, stretching further into the vineyards is not an attractive thought. So the need to, in fact, consolidate around transport developments are very important. Some specific initiatives. South Australia has introduced a inclusionary zoning through the Development Act. This operates in two different ways currently. First of all, we have what I describe as mandatory inclusionary zoning. So that is where 15% of all of the outcomes for a particular development are mandated. Now that applies on government-owned land. It applies on major developments and it applies on significant upzonings. And since that legislation has been in place, just over 12 months, we've managed to achieve about 2,000 lots in the forward pipeline, which apply to affordable housing, of which about 600 currently have land management agreements on them. The second part of the inclusionary zoning policy is really to encourage local governments to identify zones in their council areas where they believe affordable housing could and should apply, and for that to be put into their development plans. That would allow the council then to apply a set of incentives for developments that apply, claiming that the outcomes achieve affordable housing. And the Affordable Housing Trust Board has done some work which has really described, I guess, what those incentives look like, be it setbacks or be it density bonuses and the like, and has begun to price that, really to try and understand how they might work in the commercial space. In finance innovation, we think that the role of Homestart, and I acknowledge Western Australia has a similar financial instrument, is terribly important. Since 1989, we've actually provided about 50,000 loans to low and moderate income South Australians. And if you sit that next to a public and social housing effort of about the same size, you can see the real benefit from a government perspective of having some tools, some capability in both the rental and home finance area. We've established a property locator. One of the very important things we feel is it's one thing to create, to work with the private sector, to work with community providers, to create new affordable home ownership and rental. It's another thing to make sure that goes to low and moderate income households. And of course, the work of Judy Yates and others really indicates that distribution is terribly important. So we've got a very simple property locator that people can go onto. They can see what's available by way of affordable home ownership. Those properties are, in a sense, reserved for them. And through that process, they can go through normal sort of real estate purchase arrangements, through eligibility arrangements, through home finance arrangements. And in a sense, it's a way of working with the industry who come up with new product, and this is a way, of delivering that new product in the first instance to the right customer group. Our land bank is going to be important, both in terms of the public housing, the transport links and the greenfields. I think what you'll see in South Australia significantly arising from the recent planning review is the driving of developments around some of our middle ring areas linked to our infrastructure and housing areas. And whilst difficult, I think this is really the great opportunity to achieve some practical affordable housing outcomes. How would we know if all these things succeeded in 10 years' time? I guess the first point, if anyone has read recent material that shows that Gen Y are staying on and on and on. And I guess if we go back to 50 years ago and if we looked at the patterns of children moving out of house or young adults moving house in the 50, it's clearly very different today. I think the average age is now about 27 years when they sort of move on for the second time. So Gen Y actually having some options is clearly an important measure in a housing system. Secondly, we would say a teacher 5 years into a contract would be able to purchase their new home. Now, let's have a look at that as a challenge. A teacher in South Australia in that space, in an average household, would be about 20% above an average household income. So in South Australia, that's about $59,000 a year. This means that we have to work closely in a finance and a development sense to see housing products back on the ground at $213,000. That's really the challenge, I think, that faces us in South Australia and faces this nation. And I think the flip side, when I said home ownership in this country is under challenge, I really think if we don't find the key workers, the teachers and the baristas and the police and the childcare workers with those sorts of options, if they are remaining in the private rental market, I think that is a flow on that we haven't begun to think of the consequences in a structural sense. Thirdly, the private rental market needs to become an attractive long-term rental and investment proposition. Currently in this country it is relatively unstructured, and again I think one of our great hopes out of the National Rental Affordability Scheme would not just be to deliver 50,000 new houses or 100,000 new houses, but to see for a fundamental change in the dynamics of that scheme. The private rental market in some other countries is an important part of the stability of the housing sector and affordable housing, and we need to try and build that as a contributor to this country. Finally, and we've had some mention of homelessness, homelessness programs with a focus on connection to support community employment using housing as a catalyst. In some ways, this is the challenge for the modernisation of the public housing sector, is for housing to be the catalyst and the link into other areas that we know are important in terms of the creation of social inclusion and community. Can I thank CEDA for the opportunity and congratulate you on your initiative that you've taken today.